Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of World Weekly from the Financial Times. I'm Gideon Rachman. Today we're looking at turmoil in Saudi Arabia and in the wider neighbourhood. Some of the most powerful people in the Gulf Kingdom are now under arrest. And meanwhile, tensions between Saudi Arabia and Iran are rippling right across the Middle East. Joining me on the line is our Gulf Affairs correspondent, Simeon Kerr, and in Beirut, our correspondent there, Erica Solomon. Simeon, first, tell me about these arrests. What's going on? Why have they done it?
Well, it has got everyone scratching their heads. It is clearly one of the deepest, most unprecedented corruption crackdowns we've seen in the Gulf, and certainly in Saudi Arabia. The young Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has, he's ticking off a few boxes here. He has spent the last few years consolidating his power to a point where he really is, you know, his father's hand. He rules all aspects of the kingdom at the moment, and he's trying to sort of reformulate the way that business is done in Saudi Arabia in his own image. So, yeah, going after corruption is going to be he's very, very popular amongst the youth and amongst the middle classes in the kingdom, who've for many decades seen elites and princes feathering their own nests. As the Crown Prince introduces, you know, economic reforms, he's trying to show everyone that they're all in the same boat to a certain extent. But I mean, that's a sort of political angle. At the same time, you know, there has been a lot of quiet criticism within the family of what he's doing, and this is a way of, you know, sending a message within the family that, you know, no dissent will be brooked, and that they need to get on board with what he's doing. So dozens, maybe hundreds of people detained is certainly sending that message loud and clear, and everyone's noticing.
Is there a political risk attached there? Because it seems to me he's taking on some of the richest, most powerful people in Saudi Arabia, caught up in the sweeper, Prince Al-Waleed, who's probably the most well-known Saudi businessman, a billionaire, and prominent members of the royal family. It's quite a high-stakes thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is some political risk here. I think it probably illustrates the extent to which he feels that he's got a handle on the kingdom, that he can do it at this moment. I mean, at the same time, as he launched the crackdown, he removed the son of the former king, Mitib, from the National Guard, which is a very powerful sort of elite paramilitary security force in the kingdom. So, and that has for decades been loyal to King Abdullah and that branch of the family. So it's a risk, but people say he will have been working on trying to sustain their loyalty. There are others in the family too who would be upset, but I think he regards himself as, you know, his main asset is the youth. You know, he's a millennial, and you know, he's below the median age in Saudi Arabia. Above the median age in Saudi Arabia. The youth are generally with him, and he will try to portray himself as the champion of these new generations coming through, and hoping that they will bolster what he wants to do.
And just essentially, what does he want to do? We talk about Mohammed bin Salman as this great reformer. The elements are to, as I understand it, partly to make Saudi Arabia less in the grip of the extreme form of Wahhabi Islam, but and also to open up the economy. Is that basically it?
Yes, I mean, I think he's recognised that he needs to diversify the economy away from oil, because the oil, you know, is not going to last forever. And to do that is a highly complicated cultural change that's needed. This is, you know, So this crackdown is this kind of cultural revolution around, you know, sort of trying to figure out the way things are done. It's not going to be patronage via princes. It's not going to be princes giving business to their own companies. It's not all going to be about government spending, which has always been the way in the past, that all revenues creep through the economy and then the private sector depends on that. So he's trying to completely revolutionise the way that business is done in the kingdom. Now, that means that the normal Saudis are going to have a less of a generous welfare state, and in order to get them on board, you know, he's not offering democracy, but he's offering sort of more social freedoms, just things like, you know, entertainment, malls. You know, women are going to be able to drive from June. They're going to probably open cinemas at some stage, and this kind of opening up the tight social strictures is where he hopes and probably will manage to buy him some time as life gets more difficult, as given the lack of economic largesse that Saudis are going to have over the next decade or so.
And of course, Saudi Arabia, the richest country in the region, one of the most powerful, and the ripples of what's happening in Saudi Arabia affecting the whole Middle East now. And Erica, of course, where you're sitting, Lebanon has been particularly affected by Saudi policy decisions, it seems, with the Prime Minister stepping down. Can you explain what's happening there?
Yeah, I think really, in a way, Lebanon has been hostage to this whole sort of unraveling that's going on in the region as Saudi looks to escalate against Iran. The prime minister, if you think about it, he resigned, but here in Lebanon, like, most people don't really feel that he resigned. They feel that he was forced to during a visit to Saudi Arabia, which is where he resigned from, and where people still can't really get in touch with him. It's, you know, there's an ongoing debate right now in Lebanon as to whether their former prime minister is even free if he's under the custody of Saudi authorities. So that's kind of a remarkable thing if you stop to think about that for a second. You are shocked by the resignation, a surprise resignation of your you know, country's leader, and then maybe he's being held by force by another country. I mean, nobody knows, and that's the problem. So there's a lot of uncertainty here, but broadly speaking, that's almost become like a side issue to a much graver threat, which is how seriously Saudi Arabia is going to start pushing against Iran diplomatically, politically, and, you know, economically. Beirut, of course, or Lebanon, I should say, is home to the regional force Hezbollah, which is backed by Iran and is seen as one of the main sort of proxies that Iran has. So it's really important in some ways for them to be reined in if you want to try and hit back at Iran, which is why now Lebanon went from being kind of ignored over the past few years of chaos in the Middle East between what's going on with ISIS, what's going on with the Syrian civil war, to now feeling like they're about to become the center of a lot of fixation now.
So if the cause of Saudi anger at Lebanon is Hezbollah, how easy or otherwise would it be for them to take on Hezbollah, which are also, of course, traditionally enemies of Israel?
Well, not easy. For one thing, Saudi Arabia has basically, since 2011, been much less hands-on in Lebanon than it used to be. As I mentioned, there's been a lot of other conflicts in the region that have sort of taken priority away from Lebanon, which was often kind of seen as the place where the proxy wars of the region played out. And so in that period, Hezbollah has sort of slowly but surely gained more and more power and influence in the country, not just through its militant wing, but through its political wing. They have members in parliament, they have ministers. And so, you know, this is now a much more difficult issue. They are very much enmeshed in the country's military and political scene.
And is it correct to see them essentially as a proxy for Iran?
Yes and no. They are definitely, for Iran, surely sees them as a major element of their policy in the region. And so far, there doesn't seem to be much daylight between the two of them in terms of what they see as regional objectives. But more and more, when you speak to Hezbollah people, you hear them sort of saying, no, we're not just their you know, tool. We have our own views. And interestingly, Hezbollah itself is really becoming kind of its own brand. So it was before the conflict in Syria, when that started in 2011, Hezbollah very much seemed like a Lebanese movement. Now it seems to be kind of everywhere. They're believed to have done training for Shia militias in Iraq. There's a lot of suspicion that they've played some kind of a role in Yemen, potentially doing training or maybe giving weapons to the Houthi militants in Yemen. So they've suddenly kind of become their own regional force as well. But so far, I don't see any kind of rivalry or tension or even really any kind of gap in terms of the objectives of Iran or Hezbollah in the region.
And Simeon, I mean, we hear mention of Yemen there, and that, of course, is, if anything, even more likely to lead to a direct clash between Iran and Saudi Arabia, with tensions again rising this week.
Yes, indeed. I mean, the flashpoint this week was Saturday when Yemenis fired a ballistic missile which was intercepted near Riyadh airport, you know, that 1,000 kilometres, and that really sort of sharpened minds in Riyadh about the threat that they were facing after, you know, they're in their third year of their intervention in Yemen, trying to restore the government that was ousted by Houthi rebels who are said to be allied to Iran. And you know, this escalation that they saw of ballistic missiles raining down near their capital has set a lot of this in train. I mean, they presented evidence to the Americans and their allies and claiming that these are Iranian missiles. They're claiming that Hezbollah and the Iranians have been involved with training and maybe even operating them. And they're classifying this as an act of war. Now, in the last few days, the rhetoric was ramping up so rapidly amidst all this crackdown and another front that everyone got very nervous about the prospect for, you know, either these proxy wars in Yemen getting worse or even sort of tipping over into direct conflict between the two. Now, it seems that the Saudis are certainly going through the UN now. They're going through their allies. The prospect of direct confrontation, which was getting some people worried, seems less likely. But certainly, the conflict or the way that the Saudis want to sort of stop the Iranian interference around the region and via, you know, Hezbollah, means that they are going to be doubling down on in these proxy conflicts, which means for places like Yemen, which have been devastated in the last few years, one can only assume that there could be an increase. We've already seen more airstrikes. And there's a potential for, you know, the stalemated ground war to pick up again. So that seems to be the likely outcome from the Yemeni side of things.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it there for now. But thank you very much indeed to Simeon Kerr in the Gulf and to Erica Solomon in Lebanon. That's it for this week. Until next week, goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.